You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of Eastern Iowa and Western Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Dan Osborne. You may have heard of him. He was involved in what I considered to be the second most important race in the country in our recently concluded 2024 elections. The most important, obviously, was president, but Dan was running a race for the United States Senate in Nebraska. And what makes his race really interesting is the fact that he was running as an independent. It's hard enough in politics for our listeners out there to defeat an incumbent, and he was running against an incumbent Republican, but it's really hard if you're running a third party. The other thing that makes Dan's campaign interesting is the fact that we always clamor. I hear a lot of people, friends of mine, say, boy, I wish we had another choice. They're tired of our two-party system and the choices. Here's a person who offered another choice, and while he fell short, this was a really, really close race. So, Dan, thank you for coming on, and I just want to share with our listeners a little bit about this race and why it's so important, and more importantly, moving forward, what the prospects are for other candidates like you running. So thank you for taking the time.
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start at the beginning. Was this your first run for office, and what led you to run for the United States Senate? And if you can, include in this a little bit about your background.
Yeah, well, I haven't. This was my first run for any type of office. And really, I haven't always been a political type person. It really wasn't until corporate greed came knocking on my door in the form of Kellogg's. I was president of BCTGM, Local 50G, union here that's involved with Kellogg's as a mechanic for 20 years. And during COVID, we were working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. There's four plants under the umbrella, the master contractor in the United States. And we were all working those hours, no time off. At one point in time, 50% of our workforce was forced quarantine and or sick, but we kept them running at 100% capacity. And they made record profits. They went from $19 billion to $21 billion. The CEO gave himself a $2 million raise. The board enriched themselves. The stockholders enriched themselves. And our contract expired that year. Kind of figured it was going to be a no-brainer. And we'd get a little sliver of the pie. But instead, they sat across the table from us and they said they're going to take our health insurance. They're going to take our cost of living adjustment, and it's designed to keep us even with inflation. And then they're going to implement a permanent two-tier wage system with no path for a lower-tier employee to go to the upper tier. So for me as president, that was no crap moment. There hadn't been a strike in Nebraska since 1972, so I had to learn what it all meant. How to pick it, why to pick it, where to pick it. So on October 5th, midnight rolled around. We couldn't come to an agreement. It's my belief today they had no intention on coming to an agreement. So we shut down four U.S. plants and we walked off the job to preserve our wages and benefits. Certainly one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, take 500 of my friends and their family out into the great unknown, not knowing if we're going to have a job at the end of it. But we all felt we were on the right side of history. And I knew out on the picket line, Democrats were going to come out and support, because that's traditionally what they do with organized labor. But that's not the way I see my world. I've been a registered independent from the time I could register to vote. And I didn't see men or women or black or white or Republican or Democrat on a picket line. I just saw people that wanted to go to work for a fair wage and some good benefits in the time that they trade in service of the company. So I set out to make it a nonpartisan issue. I was able to get Republican Congressman Don Bacon out to a picket line to shake members, hands with my members. After he heard my pitch, then saw Governor, now U.S. Senator Pete Ricketts at an event I was at. I cornered him, told him who I was and what was going on in his state. And he agreed to meet me at the Capitol. So I drove out to Lincoln and kind of same thing there. But he drafted a letter and sent it to Steve Cahillane, the CEO, imploring him to get our people back to work. So I was pretty effective at turning it into a, you know, a nonpartisan, just a working person's issues. And that's ultimately why I decided to run for Senate. You know, I was approached by the railroaders out in North Platte. North Platte, Nebraska has the biggest rail yard in the world out there. And Senator Fisher's horrible on rail worker and labor in general. And so together we, you know, started up a campaign from nothing and turned it into something. So I was pretty proud. You know, it does sting to fall short. I feel like we were right there, and a few different changes, maybe it would be the outcome would be a little bit different. But you know, you're right. You hit the nail on the head. We ran one of the closest Senate races in the country.
Yeah, that's it's an amazing story. And again, I bring this up and focus on this only because, again, so many people are tired of the two-party system. And I imagine you faced a lot of pressure to run as a Democrat. But, I mean, when I looked at your campaign website, and it's still up if our listeners are interested, your views don't fit into any easy party or ideological category, which I think is what makes it fascinating, in that the parties don't know how to respond to somebody. And that's what makes it refreshing too. Can you talk, I guess, going back to the start of your campaign, running for the U.S. Senate is a huge, huge endeavor. But how did you get started, I guess, just politics 101 for listeners out there, working class people that are interested in this story? How'd you get started, and when did you really feel like you had some momentum going?
Yeah, we got started. I just started dialing numbers from a contact list and begging my friends for money. But you know, I'm a mechanic, and most of my friends are mechanics, so I don't have this huge, vast net worth wealthy people. But you know, there we found a lot of early donors, and you know, I suppose my brand of politics is just coming from my life experiences as working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, my military experience, and knowing what it's like to put Christmas card or Christmas on a credit card some years when you're falling behind for various reasons. So again, the strike really opened my eyes to the fact that corporations have way too much influence in our elections. And I saw it firsthand. Over $10 million came into the race at the very end there to badmouth me and call me things that I'm not. But, you know, that's what I certainly want to fight. And we're going to continue to fight that. You know, I just started a PAC. It's called WorkingClassHeroes.Fund. And we're going to go out and we're going to recruit people just like us who come from the working class so we can eventually get enough seats at the table like we deserve. So, yeah, I kind of went off on a tangent there. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I was going to ask you about this pack anyway because I wanted our listeners to hear it, but that's fine. You answered the first part of my question. The second part was you started out and probably it felt overwhelming at times, I'll bet. But this race caught fire. I remember reading about it back in June. When did you start feeling you had a real chance to win this thing, or did you just feel like from the beginning that the public was ready for this?
Yeah, that was Jonathan came out. He flew out to Omaha from the New York Times, and they wrote an article about what we were doing. They saw that we were starting to fundraise and, you know, break some records for independents in Nebraska with fundraising. And just the amount of work, the sheer amount of work that we did, you know, out in Nebraska is a pretty big state. Landmass, and I did over 100 in publicly advertised events. But I suppose it was that New York Times article that gained us some notoriety. And so, you know, the local papers and the local TV started to take some interest. And then we turned in the biggest, I suppose, when it got real, was we turned in 12,000 signatures from all 93 counties to get officially on the ballot. And then the first independent poll came out right after that, had Fisher at 39 and me at 38. And that's when it really took off. And that's when she just ran a negative ad campaign. She refused to debate. You know, it wasn't that long ago in our nation's history, if you refused to debate, you just conceded the race. But apparently that's where we're at these days. So, but yeah, that prompted her to go negative. And that's when the money started pouring in, really started to take notice. And, you know, we raised, I want to say close to $12 million by the time everything was said and done. And our average donation was $40. So I think it really was powered by the people, the way the framers of the Constitution intended his government to be, by and for the people. It was pretty simple.
Yeah. And the results were interesting. I think these numbers are correct, but the last I saw, Harris got, I think, 38 or 39% in Nebraska. You got 46.5%. That's a lot different. Is that because you didn't have the D behind your name, or was it something broader where you were appealing to folks, you know, regardless of party? You obviously got a lot of Republican support and Democratic support.
Yeah, I think that just boils down to just talking to people at a you know, a level that we're all on as people who go to work. You know, like I said, I did 180 events publicly advertised, and we would just talk about the issues. And, you know, sometimes we just have to agree to disagree at the end of the day on an issue. But when we focus on the issues, we're not as divided as, you know, the media led us to believe. But as soon as the word Trump or Harris or Republican or Democrat gets thrown out in a room, everybody starts pointing fingers and pop, pop, pop. And then we go back to the issues again, and everybody can start nodding heads together and trying to find solutions to the issues and from where they live. And I think that was part of the secret to my success, was just staying issue focused and just leaving party politics out of it. And I think it really goes to show that people are thirsty for a change. People are thirsty to find an alternative or something that's different than the status quo that really isn't doing a whole lot of good for anybody.
I think we all agree on that. The status quo has worked, and a lot of the models that are working, especially campaign models, just aren't working. So some of your views, you agreed with Trump on the border, but yet you also agreed your corporate greed statement would be more in line with the Democrats, although there are some Republicans, like J.D. Vance, I will say, that kind of is going over to that line of thinking as well. Did you run into that where people were kind of like, wait a minute, you know, you're hard to pigeonhole here? And my sense is that was part of the appeal, but I want to hear what you say, your take when you talk to voters.
Yeah, and I've had a couple people tell me that they lost their vote because I wouldn't tell them who I was going to vote for president. As we made an announcement pretty early on that we don't take endorsements and we don't give endorsements. And, you know, don't give them either. So hang on. My daughter's just getting home from.
That's okay. That's fine.
But, yeah, this is kind of my sanctuary out here.
That's okay. I will share with our listeners that Dan is still working. He went back to his normal job, and so we had to arrange this interview around his schedule a bit for going back to his regular job. He's not a lawyer or anything like that. He's a working guy, and he went back to it after the campaign.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. That's why a lot of regular people don't run, because you know, most people. Like a Fisher would have lost, I mean, I'm sure she could have rode off into the sunset with her $10 million. But, you know, regular folks, they got to, first of all, they have to get permission to take time off. Luckily, the owner of my company, he's an independent guy too. So he liked what we were trying to do. So he was pretty lenient about the whole thing.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very pleased and honored to have as my guest Dan Osborne, who was the independent candidate for the U.S. Senate in Nebraska. He fell just short, but it was a very unique campaign, and it's my contention that this was one of the most important races in the country, probably just second after the presidential race, because of this desire people have for something different in politics. They're tired of the two parties. And here was a person who ran in a very Republican state and came close to defeating an incumbent senator, which just doesn't happen very often. We've been talking a little bit about Dan's campaign. I'm particularly interested, Dan, in excuse me, rural counties. Nebraska is a heavily rural state. A big share of the vote is in rural counties. And I just mentioned that you fell short. You ran better than Harris, excuse me, by about 7 or 8 points. You ran even better in rural counties. I looked it up. Was there something, a specific message or strategy you had in rural areas, or was that just more working class type people that really liked your message and your background?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. You know, again, I connect with people on a pretty deep level. I don't own a suit. I don't walk into places with a suit. You know, so I kind of look just like the farmers do for the most part. But it's really the message about, you know, I always say Robin Williams, the famous comedian, said it best when he said our politicians should be wearing NASCAR jackets with patches of their sponsors so we know how they're going to vote. And then when you're talking to ag people who live that world every day, and then you tell them, you know, Senator Fisher's taking money from, you know, all the chemical companies and the meat packers, and she turns around and does their bidding. It's not a hard sell. And I truly believe that if I could have got out in front of, you know, the majority of those people, instead of them just seeing me on a TV ad being attacked by Fisher, you know, we would have won by a pretty large margin. But it's impossible to be able to talk to every single person.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of TV ads, I saw yours that's called the Blowtorch ad. Could you describe that for me, please?
Yeah. So it's we bought a flat screen TV for super cheap. So don't get mad at me. But it was running one of Deb Fisher's attack ads saying that I'm a Trojan horse, which no, that's not it at all. I'm just Dan Osborne, a guy that goes to work and wanted to make a difference in our country and in my state. But I said, this is why people are sick of politics, and this is why people don't want to run, and it just makes you want to cut your TV in half. So I turned on the blowtorch, and the film crew is, what's going to happen when you do that? I go, I have no idea. Just keep a fire extinguisher handy, I guess. And so we tried to do all the safety protocols and, you know, the welding hood. I even had a guy tell me he didn't vote for me because I was wearing a welding hood when I was using a torch, even though there's a torch setting inside of the welding helmet. But whatever, people can get pretty funny sometimes, I suppose. But yeah, so I cut the word lie into the TV with the oxyacetylene torch. It was pretty fun.
Folks want to see it, just Google blowtorch ad, Dan Osborne, and you'll get a chance. It was one of the more creative ads of this cycle, because most of the ads you see, I hit the mute button when I see them, but that one was actually creative. I want to ask about one issue here that I've seen pop up a lot in rural working class areas. That's this right to repair issue. Can you talk about that and describe that a little bit for our listeners? Because I've seen that in several campaigns used across the Midwest. I don't know if it's a countrywide thing or not, but can you just explain that a little bit for me?
Well, it should be countrywide. And it's one of those issues that fly under the radar. And it's just it's another perfect example of corporate dominated world and the rich getting richer. So it started with John Deere making their equipment proprietary, so farmers can't work on their own equipment. So they either have to have a rep come out to the farm, or they got to take this. It'd be like having to take your car to the dealership versus another mechanic, an independent mechanic, or fixing it yourself. And it's spilling into the automotive industry. They're starting to microchip parts. So if you don't buy the OEM part, it's not going to read with the computer in your car. You know, you used to be able to take the back of your cell phone off and replace your battery for $50. It was good for another 2 years. That's right to repair. You know, the fact that it's almost cheaper to buy a new printer than it is the ink cartridges to replace the replacement cartridges, that's right to repair. And, you know, it's taking money out of our pockets at a time where it's hard enough to keep money in your pocket.
Yeah, that's another corporate issue. And I think there's a recognition, one thing parts of both parties are seeming to agree on, and I think it was a major role in your race, is the role that major corporations have. I know Trump sometimes talks the language, but then in office, maybe he backs off a little. But In my area, where I live, we had a Maytag facility close and move to Mexico. So, I mean, I know that's happened across the Midwest and across the country, but do you see any chances here, Dan, that there could be an emerging movement to kind of cut back corporate greed, or are we just going to be disappointed again here? What are your thoughts?
Well, not if I have anything to say about it. It's frustrating. Like you mentioned, moving jobs to Mexico and overseas, it happens so frequently now. You know, the CHIP Act certainly has brought some more manufacturing jobs back to the country, but not near enough. These jobs are extremely important. And I think these corporations, ultimately, they have a responsibility to the country that allowed them to operate and become wealthy and, you know, by the laws of the land. And they have a responsibility to that and to the people who helped build that into something, you know, because they couldn't, nobody can do anything by themselves. That's for sure. You know, it takes the architect to plan the building and the steel workers to erect it. You know, it takes so many different people. But yeah, that's why I think, you know, the steel workers don't have a seat at the table, but it's the architects that do, because they have, you know, they have enough money to be able to buy their way into Senate seats because they got rich friends. But yeah, I just got to tell you, you see it more and more. You know, Kellogg's has got two plants down in Mexico. Where does it end? Are food getting made down there too? You know, we gotta get ahead of this. And we have to elect people that aren't going to take corporate PAC money, just like I didn't, because I didn't want to be beholden to them when I got elected.
I have to ask you, as well as you did in Nebraska, again, you're, especially in rural counties, there was another Senate race going, and you outperformed that candidate even more across the state and in rural Nebraska. With all the problems Democrats have, in rural counties where Harris just got blown out, I'm just curious, has anybody from the party reached out to you and said, hey, what can we learn from you? Or has anybody from the Republican Party reached out?
Nobody's reached out directly to me. You know, we're going to be doing a lot of media work. I just did another New York Times piece and Politico piece talking about the launch of the Working Class Heroes Fund. And then we're going to be going doing a lot of, I'll be on Fox News, CNN, MSNBC tomorrow. So hopefully that'll be able to help spread the word and get the word out. And, you know, I don't feel like I did anything special other than just go out and be myself and talk about issues and learn what ails people. We actually did a What Ails You tour. All right. And went to the bar at night and we had a beer and just tried to work through problems. So it was quite the ride.
You should write a country song, What Ails You. I bet that would take off. I've got to ask too. I want to talk more about your PAC here and give you a chance to explain it. The day we're taping this, it was just announced. Talk about it again. I know you mentioned it before, but I think it's important because we've got a lot of people out there, I think, that are interested in this. What's the name of it again, and what's your overarching goal?
Yeah, it's you'd have to go to www.workingclassheroes.fund. And then I got all the information on there. You can actually, if you're thinking about running for office yourself, you're an independent person. It doesn't even matter if you're independent. If you're just trying to figure out how to get into politics, whether it's your local school board or your state level, county level, you want to give working class people a seat at the table, you can apply. And so hopefully we'll be able to get some folks elected that share the same values. Going after not doing corporate bidding, right? Getting the corruption out of politics. People who are interested in ending Citizens United, that states corporations are people and money is free speech. That's all BS. And so those are the candidates that I want to go recruit and find and help get elected and just make this country a better place.
Just to make clear, that's from as low as school board elections, city council, all the way up to U.S. Senate. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
The more seats at the table we have, the better off we're going to be as working class people.
Yeah, it's a very important moment. And again, we talk about that word diversity, which has different meanings to people. But one area where our country is not diverse is backgrounds of people. And I think that's where your candidacy was truly groundbreaking, in having somebody that actually works with their hands for a living, a union member like you to run for office. And I think it's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's what the whole purpose of this PAC is too. So I'll continue to go to work and run this PAC on the side, and hopefully it can take off to be something really meaningful and really help some people out in their perspective areas.
Last question, Dan. I got about 1 minute left. Totally offbeat question. What was the your funniest thing that happened on a campaign trail? Was there one that stands out?
Yeah, I'll have to send you the video. I
Oh.
went to Wayne Chicken Days in Wayne, Nebraska. They just everything chicken. They celebrate chicken, and they have a cluck off. Well, I just happen to have a chicken mask that I had that I wore for Halloween a few years ago. So I dug that out, and I took a rubber chicken up to the microphone with me, and I did a duet for the cluck off. And I, you know what? I didn't place. I thought I did really well, but I have a feeling it's because I'm from Omaha, and they probably figure, oh, somebody from Omaha can't quite possibly know how to cluck like a chicken as good as we can out here in Wayne. So I think there might have been a little bias there, but that was pretty fun.
All right. Well, Dan Osborne's been my guest today on Heartland Politics. And again, for our listeners, this race was very important. What you see is what you get with Dan. He's an average type guy, and I think it's a voice we need in politics more. So, congratulations on your campaign. I sorry you fell short. I think I can say that. But I look forward to watching your new organization and hope it grows. Can you please give the website address again?
Yep, it's www.workingclassheroes.fund.
Okay, got it. Dan, thank you again, and thank you for taking the time to be our guest today.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.